Raw Nation's Hot Rocks is the only raw, vegan, certified organic vitamin for your sex drive. Hot Rocks is made using only the purest organic superfoods and herbs in their raw, unaltered state. We've created this synergistic blend of powerful herbs that intensifies sexual energy and performance in both men and women. It's like an overall vitality pill that makes you feel amazing. There's absolutely no chemicals, pesticides, or harsh stimulants in Hot Rocks. If you already have a strong sex drive, Hot Rocks will help you maintain it and keep it from slipping away. The problem that affects even the healthiest people nowadays because of the amount of toxicity that we are all exposed to. So what are you waiting for? We offer a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can order Hot Rocks risk-free. It's time to experience pure bliss and the only truly healthy libido enhancer on the market, Hot Rocks. Order online at hotrocks.com. That's HOTRAWKS.com. Or call us 855-RAW-LIFE. That's 855-729-5433.
Friends, I just did my annual economic briefing with author and Swiss America chairman Craig R. Smith, and what I discovered confirms my worst fears. Something is getting ready to happen that's going to change the course of world history, and not one in a thousand will believe it until it's already too late, and I don't want that to be you. After writing four important books accurately predicting the future of gold, oil, the dollar, and inflation, Mr. Smith is on the verge of releasing his next book, and this new CD covers the root issue of the coming crisis and offers three critical steps to protect your family from the fallout. Please call today for this hot new CD, The Future of Money. Toll free, 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. You've got to hear The Future of Money to believe it. 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. Do it today.
Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. In uncertain times, you need gear you can count on. That's why I teamed up with Daniel Vitalis to launch SupplySource.com. It's a new online retailer offering extremely durable gear for emergency preparedness and long-term survival. Everything we offer survives my daily use test on a ranch in Texas, plus Daniel's outdoor endurance test in the rugged wilderness of Maine. Most of the stuff we test ends up in a pile of trash because it breaks. The stuff that doesn't break, we stock it on SupplySource.com. To get the site started, we've launched it with a line of rugged, reliable, waterproof LED flashlights, now chosen by military and law enforcement everywhere. And we'll soon be adding a whole new brand of emergency water filters, family defense gear, and urban survival tools. When you want your gear to really work, get it from SupplySource.com.
This is Mental Health Exposed on Natural News Radio with Mike Bundrant.
All right, welcome to Natural News Radio. This is Mental Health Exposed, and I'm your host, Mike Bundrant. I'm real excited today because I get to interview Noah Rubenstein of GoodTherapy.org. Noah's the founder of GoodTherapy.org, and if you're not familiar with it, you should go there. It's a directory. It's one of the most respected and well-traveled directories on the internet of therapists, but it's more than a directory. I mean, you can go there, you can put in your zip code, you can find a GoodTherapy.org approved mental health professional in your local area. But beyond that, what I really respect about Noah, he's a licensed marriage and family therapist, and he cares about the industry. He's not just in it to make a living, and he's not just in it to help who he can help in his local area, but he's reaching out and he's trying to make improvements in the field, and we need those kinds of improvements. We'll talk about the mission of GoodTherapy.org with Noah, but I'd want to say up front that their efforts to address and prevent therapists from misusing their power, from taking advantage of clients, from getting their own needs met at the expense of their clients, from condescending toward their clients, from punishing their clients, and so on and so forth. These efforts are incredibly important, not only to those of us in the mental health field who are trying to make a difference, but to the people who rely on mental health counselors and professionals for help in their lives. In an ideal world, we should not have to put up with some of the things that go on in the field. Yet, life is life, reality is reality, and I'm thankful for people like Noah who are trying to make a difference, and I'm really excited to get to talk with him about the difference that he's making here today through goodtherapy.org.
This year alone, one in three Americans will experience a mental health issue. When coping with life's challenging situations of all kinds, it is important to get the right kind of help. GoodTherapy.org is your advocate and resource for finding the right therapist. GoodTherapy.org is an association of thousands of therapists who value collaborative therapy and believe their clients have the power to tap into their own internal resources. Each GoodTherapy.org therapist is individually verified for adherence to strict educational, licensure, and philosophical guidelines. GoodTherapy.org is more than just a therapist directory. As part of its mission and vision to educate consumers about the differences between healthy and unhealthy therapy, GoodTherapy.org provides a wealth of resources about the process of therapy and mental health-related blogs, news, and expert articles. If you or somebody you know needs help, would like to find a therapist, or would like information about mental health, visit www.goodtherapy.org, because everybody deserves to feel good.
Okay, Noah Rubenstein of GoodTherapy.org, thanks so much for joining us on Mental Health Exposed. I'm glad you could take the time.
Thanks, Mike. I'm really happy to be here, and thanks for the lovely introduction.
You bet. Now, listen, we got a lot of great things to talk about, but first, tell me a little bit about GoodTherapy.org. What is it?
Yeah, GoodTherapy.org is a directory of over 6,000 therapists worldwide in 25 different countries, mostly in the U.S. and Canada. And what's unique about our therapists is that all of them really value collaborative and non-pathologically based therapy. They're deeply committed to the idea that therapy is about helping people to tap into their own resources. And they view and treat their clients as fundamentally capable and proficient rather than fundamentally flawed and deficient.
And that's what you mean by non-pathologically based. Can you say a little bit more just to define that?
Yeah. So, I plan to talk a lot about that in depth, but briefly, non-pathological, it doesn't mean that pathology doesn't exist. It means not making that our focus. And that the person is more than the problems that they're experiencing. So
that's great.
Someone has a part of them that's depressed, they're not a depressed person.
I got it. Okay, great.
Yeah, and we can certainly dive more into that. But, our directory allows people who are seeking therapy to find and contact therapists in their area. And we get about 1.5 million therapist searches a month across both GoodTherapy.org and all of our partner sites that we power directories for. And in addition, we publish about 4 or 5 articles a day related to psychotherapy and mental health issues, all in an effort to demystify therapy, to inform consumers about the differences between healthy and unhealthy therapy. So we have a blog, we have a Dear Abby-style column called DearGoodTherapy.org, and we're about to launch a forum. And all of this is really because of our mission, and the mission is to reduce harm in therapy, to advocate for healthy and ethical psychotherapy practices through awareness, through education, through information. We want to encourage therapists to work collaboratively and non-pathologically, as I mentioned earlier, through continuing education, through having the highest membership requirements of any directory. And we want to depathologize diagnostic-based language and therapy practices. Most important to me is really educating consumers. Knowledge is power. So we produce a lot of articles, articles like What is Therapy?, Elements of Good Therapy?, How to Find the Right Therapist?, Signs of Healthy Therapy?, Warning Signs of Questionable Therapy?, and many, many others.
Wow, it sounds like a really valuable resource, and I appreciate how you're wanting to get away from the labels and take a view of people where you seem to be looking at them as a whole person. I would call it a holistic view rather than a series of symptoms that lead to a diagnosis.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Why did you start GoodTherapy.org?
Well, that's a long story and a story I like to tell. And I guess I would preface my answer by saying that my experience is that most therapists are well-meaning, well-intentioned, big-hearted folk who really help people. The majority of therapists put a lot of time and energy into being conscious of themselves, recognizing their own defenses, recognizing their own transference and their own projection, and really doing their best to keep their... can I cuss on the air?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they do their best to keep their shit out of the way.
Right.
You know, so, and the best therapists are really the ones who truly needed to do their own therapy. They're the wounded healers who can help others because they're intimately familiar with both the emotional wounds that humans pass around on this planet and the healing process. You know, it's like Hemingway and his quote, or the world breaks everyone and afterward many are strong in the broken places. Uh-huh. Or like Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning, he wrote, "What is to give light must endure burning." And from my own experience, the only reason I've been able to really help anyone is because of the crap I went through in my childhood and the therapy that I did to care for those childhood wounds. So with that said, there is a small percentage of therapists who don't do their own work, who don't keep their stuff out of the therapy, who cause serious damage to their clients and the profession, and they contribute to the stigma. So over time, I became fed up with hearing horror stories of therapists misusing their power, getting their own needs met at the expense of their clients, you know, needs to feel powerful or smart, appreciated, good, loved, seen, in control, all those same psychological needs that most people have. And I got fed up with therapists violating ethical boundaries, particularly dual relationships, and treating clients sometimes in punitive and condescending ways. You know, therapists that were just sort of, you know, stuck on that high horse. So in answer to your question, I founded goodtherapy.org because I was angry, and I wanted a higher standard for therapists, and I wanted to reduce harm.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, you talk about therapists misusing their power. How did you become aware of that? I mean, you're wanting to help solve that problem, but what were the circumstances behind that for you?
Yeah, I first became aware there was a problem in the field of psychotherapy in the 90s when I was in graduate school. At the time, I was subscribed to the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapy magazine, and in each issue, they list the disciplinary actions taken by the Board of Behavioral Sciences in response to ethical violations. And I was shocked by the volume of disciplinary actions and the kinds of ethical violations, mostly dual relationships, which is an abuse of power. Everything from therapists trying to become friends with their clients to selling them Mary Kay products to having sexual and romantic relationships, and then rationalizing that as part of the client's healing process. So, you know, so that's how I first became aware. And then after graduate school, I worked, you know, really hard to be an effective therapist. Unfortunately, I was under the impression that in order to be a good therapist, I had to know a lot of information and that therapy was a process of solving people's problems for them. And it's really easy to fall into this trap as a new therapist, especially when many clients expect therapists to fix their problems and to, you know, give them the answers. And, you know, the pressure of feeling like I needed to solve people's problems led me to work extremely hard to understand the psyche. I read everything I could get my hands on. I kept up on all the clinical research, but my clients weren't really getting better. And all of this led me to really begin to burn out and to question whether I really had what it takes to be a decent therapist. And eventually, thankfully, I started doing my own therapy and began an in-depth, you know, a number of sort of in-depth training programs, which helped me to understand myself and the process of therapy. So I learned a lot about what it is to be a helpful therapist by being a not so helpful therapist.
Right.
So, yeah. Hopefully that answers
Yeah, absolutely. And I do in my own background as a therapist, I remember as a 25-year-old young man sitting there and feeling the pressure that I need to do something to solve this person's problem. I mean, I absolutely remember that and sort of where that drove me. It takes a little bit to it takes a little bit to get beyond that. So, but you talk about dual relationships, of course, I can see, having a sexual relationship with a client and so forth, or I put myself in the position of a listener and say, okay, a therapist shouldn't take advantage of his client or her client in that way, of course, but selling Mary Kay products, or I mean, there's what's wrong with, a little bit, not so contained interaction. Tell us a little bit more about dual relationships. What are they
Sure,
really, and
sure.
what's wrong with them?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, for those listeners that don't understand what that means, because I certainly didn't, even as a in graduate school when I first was introduced to the concept of a dual relationship, as it applies to therapy, it's when a therapist has any relationship with a client other than providing therapy. That's when a dual relationship exists, and it could mean providing therapy to friends or family members, colleagues, employees, employing clients or hiring them to do odd jobs in the home or the office, entering into a business relationship or partnership with a client, and as you mentioned, by far the most damaging, soliciting or engaging a client in romantic or sexual contact. So, and dual relationships are by far the leading cause of malpractice lawsuits filed by therapy clients. So what's wrong with a dual relationship? The short answer is that the power imbalance is the problem. It's impossible to have a fair, equal relationship if there's a power imbalance. Let me try to explain that. By the nature of a client seeking the services of a therapist who's a perceived expert, to help solve their problems, by the fact that the relationship is one-sided, in that the self-disclosure is largely, if not entirely, in one direction, the client revealing intimate details of their life and the therapist revealing little to none, and even though dependency is discouraged, the client is depending on the services of the therapist to help, at a minimum, and sometimes, however unhealthy, depending on the therapist to fulfill much greater psychological needs. So as a result of all of this, a power imbalance exists. The therapist is an extremely important person to the client, but not vice versa. And that's the bottom line. In light of the power imbalance, should the therapist initiate a dual relationship by inviting the therapist to a social event or asking them to babysit or asking them to pick something up at the store to do an errand for them, or even asking their advice. Like if you have a client, if a therapist has a client that's, an accountant or attorney asking for financial or legal advice, that has a profound impact on the client because the therapist is important to the client. As a result of depending on them, depending on the therapist to help them deal with painful, sometimes desperate situations, the client's going to feel compelled to assist the therapist even if they don't want to. And if we imagine for a moment what would go through someone's mind, a client's mind, should a therapist ask the client to do some kind of favor, you can imagine they would think something like, boy, wow, if I say no, what will my therapist think of me? Will he be angry? Will he disapprove of me? Will he reject me? Will he stop meeting with me? And you can see how for clients, especially those with lower self-esteem or codependency issues, it would be really difficult to refuse a therapist, even in the face of romantic and sexual advances. So, let's say the client complies and agrees to trade therapy for, I don't know, let's say housekeeping or janitorial services for the therapist's office. What happens if the janitorial work is subpar and the therapist feels the need to provide feedback? No matter how constructive the feedback, the client's going to experience less than total unconditional positive regard, which will impact the therapeutic relationship and the success of therapy. You know, how's the client going to feel safe and open up if he thinks his therapist is displeased with him? So that sort of describes what can happen maybe in what looks like less harmless kinds of a dual relationship. But there's no such thing as a harmless dual relationship. Now, when a client falls in love with their therapist, which I think is more harmful, regardless of who initiates the dual relationship, the therapist or the client is clearly idealizing the therapist as a part of the dependency, as a part of the power imbalance that exists. So now some argue this kind of fantasy process of, you know, happens in all crushes, and I tend to think it does. But a therapist has a responsibility to help the client to recognize their fantasy projections, their fantasy transference. And when a therapist reciprocates and expresses their own crush on a client, not only is there a missed opportunity for healing and really a reinforcement of the client's tendency to look outside themselves to feel better, it has the potential to be terribly damaging. Once the therapist gets their needs met, tires with it, gets bored, comes out of fantasy land, realizes the violation, the ethical violation they've made, and decides they want to break off the affair, it often, you know, leads to really the complete breakdown of the client. In some cases, causing severe depression, shame, confusion, betrayal, abandonment, even suicide. So, sexual or non-sexual, what we have in all dual relationships is a therapist taking advantage of their power, misusing it to get their needs met at the expense of their clients. And it doesn't matter to me whether it's conscious or unconscious, it's at the expense of the therapy, it's at the expense of the trusting, of the trust that should exist in a client-therapist relationship. So, wow, that was a mouthful.
Well, I gotta tell you, I made sense. and you're incredibly clear about it. And what comes to my mind as you describe it is that, you know, a therapist should really understand the burden of responsibility. In other words, you need to be a really mature person,
yes,
with clear boundaries,
yes,
and your intention toward the client needs to be pure.
You know, I've certainly had many clients that I think are amazing human beings and some that I know in another context would make great friends, but I've never been tempted to cross the boundary with a client. I've had a number of clients express wanting to cross the boundary with me, you know, typically wanting to be friends, to do something social. And it's always a very rich conversation to have about the reasons why doing that is difficult. And sure, you know, I recognize when a female client is attractive, but it's almost like, you know, if I can talk in sort of Eastern or energetic medicine for a moment, it's like that chakra's closed, you know.
Right.
And what's open for me when I meet with clients is my heart. And some of the female clients I've seen in my practice have never before experienced a trusting, non-sexual relationship with a man. And I'm so aware of how important it is for them to have that. And it's always been an honor to be that trusting man and to witness a woman heal as a part of that relationship. So, that's kind of been my experience. Early on in my career, I had a female client who implicitly and then explicitly eventually expressed her expectation that I would fall in love with her and really wanted me to come on to her because her former therapist, the male therapist, had fallen in love with her and they had a sexual relationship. And so for my client, going to therapy was about getting love and attention from the therapist. And, you know, of course, I empathized with her needs, but set a boundary and suggested that we explore that need of hers to be wanted. But she, you know, nonetheless felt rejected and became suicidal and threatened to kill me because...
Threatened to kill you?
Yes, yeah.
She became homicidal.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty scary. I mean, I didn't feel physically intimidated, but it's scary anytime someone has that kind of ideation. And I think her pain and her need to be loved was just so deep and painful. And so when we have deep pain like that, we generally cover it up. Had she stayed in therapy, the focus would have been on helping her to find the love she needed inside of herself rather than looking outside. And it was really terrible to see the damage her former therapist caused. I think it's probably safe to say she had wounds prior to seeing her former therapist, but by him, this isn't the perfect analogy in this situation, but by him feeding her the fish she wanted rather than teaching her to fish for herself, by abusing his power, he really caused a lot of damage and only made her worse. So when you see stuff like that, you understand the damage that can be done, and you never want to be a part of that.
Yeah, and I think this is an important conversation to have for the industry as well, because I think as practitioners, and it's not just therapists now, it's practitioners of all kinds that hold a position of power, whether they want it or not, people tend to give power away. And as you mentioned earlier to me, whether it was we were recording or not at that time, I don't know. But as you mentioned earlier, it's usually the therapist that abuses the power. People empower their practitioners and trust them, and it's really important that we understand what our role is and be clear about it. I had a client once. I don't want to get into too much telling, therapy war stories, this is an important issue. I had a client once when she was around 40 when she came to see me, and at 19 years old, her parents took her to a gynecologist and he raped her.
Oh God!
And which then started, and then she. Started a relationship with him on a regular basis, and eventually she just sort of gave into it, and and that's what she did. When she got out of that, she had told me that over the years, how many different practitioners that she'd had sex with, and we're talking chiropractors, therapist, a hypnotherapist, but. She would ultimately come on to every practitioner that she would go see and often go seek help in order to start a relationship. This is how she learned to relate with men.
Uh-oh.
And she had rarely found a man that wouldn't reciprocate. And this is her story. I'm sure there were plenty of practitioners that turned her down. But the point is she found plenty who didn't turn her down.
Yeah.
And I made it really clear, this is about 6 months into therapy, that she sort of told me the full story. And I made it really clear that I was going to be one of the people that wouldn't be available for that, but that I would enjoy helping her learn how to engage in a relationship with a healthy man that was not her therapist or her anything other than the man she met. And she didn't feel like she deserved that. Well, 4 years later, she had worked through it and entered into a relationship with a man with no other strings attached. And I just thought that was one of the greatest accomplishments that I'd seen a client make. But this is, when you think about it, 4 years sounds like a long time, but 20 years engaging in these really damaging relationships with people who are so willing. That's what shocked me. I mean, I was naive with these people who were so willing to do this with a client. And these were married men. These were, and it's really ugly. And I think people who practitioners who abuse that power, who abuse that, they should have their license taken away. They should go to jail. I mean, we should really really eliminate these people from these professions because it's really sick.
Yeah, doctors, therapists, their job is to be the guardian of the client self. And they're not guarding the client self when they engage in that kind of behavior. They're letting their own biological and psychological needs become the priority. So, you know, good job working with her. And, you know, 4 years I don't think is a long time to, you know, that's sometimes that's what it takes to work through stuff like that. And I'm really glad that she was able to, you know, learn how to have a no strings attached kind of real authentic relationship.
Yeah, took her a while just to trust that I really wasn't interested in that kind of relationship, but I still wanted to be helpful to her. But anyways, what do you consider, we're talking about what can go wrong, but what do you consider good therapy to be?
And I'd like you to answer that right after this break.
Raw Nation's Hot Rocks is the only raw, vegan, certified organic vitamin for your sex drive. Hot Rocks is made using only the purest organic superfoods and herbs in their raw, unaltered state. We've created this synergistic blend of powerful herbs that intensifies sexual energy and performance in both men and women. It's like an overall vitality pill that makes you feel amazing. There's absolutely no chemicals, pesticides, or harsh stimulants in Hot Rocks. If you already have a strong sex drive, Hot Rocks will help you maintain it and keep it from slipping away, the problem that affects even the healthiest people nowadays because of the amount of toxicity that we are all exposed to. So what are you waiting for? We offer a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can order Hot Rocks risk-free. It's time to experience pure bliss and the only truly healthy libido enhancer on the market, Hot Rocks. Order online at hotrocks.com, that's HOTRAWKS.com, or call us 855-RAW-LIFE, that's 855-729-5433.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
And we're back on Mental Health Exposed. This is Natural News Radio. I'm your host, Mike Bundrant. We're on with Noah Rubenstein of GoodTherapy.org. And the question I left you with right before the break, Noah, was what do you consider good therapy to be?
You know, for me, good therapy isn't a particular model of therapy because there's a lot of different models of therapy that we hear people talk about all the time. You know, I do have my preferences of models of therapy based on what's worked for me and worked for my clients. But really my vision of good therapy is largely centered around a number of principles that I think can be present universally across all models or forms of psychotherapy. And it was one of the first articles that I published on goodtherapy.org an article called The Elements of Good Therapy, and there are 9 of them. I think there are others that I just haven't had a chance to add, and I could share some of these with you.
Sure.
And you know, no particular order. The first element, and we talked about this briefly in the beginning, is non-pathology. And really the hallmark of non-pathology is the practice of viewing a person as greater than his or her problems. It doesn't mean problems don't exist. It means not viewing the problems as the whole person or the whole person as the problem. So, you know, for example, rather than labeling a person who's sad all the time as a depressed, sad person, we can view the sadness as just one aspect of the person. Rather than labeling someone who acts like a pretentious snob as a stuck-up pretentious snob, it's helpful to remember that the person wasn't born that way. It's not all of who they are, and there's a reason they interact with others in such a way. So, you know, I believe that we do justice to a person when we remember that behind their protective parts, no matter how self-destructive or hurtful that they've been, that there's a lovable, loving, and vulnerable person at the core. The idea is that we're all born these loving, lovable little beings, other than the small percentage of sociopaths, which is, from what we can tell, really an organic hardware problem. Other than that, most of us are born fully equipped to connect and relate and love and feel good about ourselves. But shit happens in life. We get hurt. And we develop ways of protecting ourselves from ever getting hurt again. And these survival strategies, defense mechanisms, or what Richard Schwartz, an important teacher of mine, simply calls parts. These parts cause harm to self and others, but they're trying to help us. You know, whether by parts I mean parts that are depressed or self-critical or snobby or anxious or doesn't matter what. They're all protective parts, and they're good parts because they're trying to help. And behind these protective parts, there is a loving, lovable, vulnerable person at the core. So non-pathology is, in part, remembering that. The other really important thing to understand about working non-pathologically is that it doesn't negate pathology. I'm not saying pathology doesn't exist. It's really our approach to pathology. It's really our understanding of pathology that matters. And I'd love to explain that.
Sure.
So certainly there are some disorders, and disorder is a word I loathe. But there are some disorders that are purely organic in etiology, meaning a hardware problem, not a software problem, more genetic, biochemical, neurological, perhaps some forms of schizophrenia or major depression or bipolar disorders might be purely organic. My experience is that most of the issues people go to therapy for are not disorders. They are not hardware problems. They are software problems. They're the result of life experience and the person's psyche doing the best it can to deal with life, to adapt, to survive, and to prevent from ever getting hurt again. And most of what are labeled as disorders are actually very organized, very orderly psychological reactions, not disorderly, orderly.
That's interesting.
And yeah, and treatment when we're dealing with orderly psychological reactions does not necessitate amputating or medicating away anything, which is what the medical model does with pathology. Instead, treatment of a software problem requires curiosity and compassion. That's how we undo the orderly and organized response to suffering. If we can understand on both a cognitive and an emotional level the reason for someone feeling depressed or anxious or angry or numb or whatever, then we can really help the person's inner system to reorganize. Again, because issues are very orderly, organized, systemic problems. The word disorder is simply inadequate, and it's terribly misleading. on top of it, being labeled with a disorder provokes shame. It provokes inadequacy, and it makes people feel worse. I understand that some argue that when people finally have a label or a name to describe whatever they've been experiencing, it provides a sense of control and perhaps even hope. But I think therapists can provide that same sense of control and hope without the word disorder and without the medical model approach to throwing out the pathology. The pathology is the key to healing. We can't, if we amputate it, if we medicate it away, it's like stitching a wound without taking the bullet out. So it's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So anyhow, that's the other important thing to understand about working non-pathologically.
And I want to point out that when you say the word disorder, it's misleading in that, and it's potentially damaging to people. I want to point out it's especially damaging to children. You talk about these lovable beings that come into the world, and shit happens, and we get hurt, and we splinter off these different parts of ourselves to try to keep ourselves intact, actually, and feel safe. We can't express the hurt. We don't know what to do with it, so we scurry it off into a corner there and repress it. Well, when you're labeled as deficit with a disorder, as in attention deficit disorder, it's damaging. It's another example of something that hurts children. And I think, and they're so quick to be labeled that those labels and people, if they understood the impact that it has, I think that we would all be a little less likely to sling those labels around based on a 3-minute observation of a child who's wiggling around. It's really important. The way you talk about the curiosity and compassion of listening and understanding and getting behind, getting access to an area where somebody's hurt as a way to help them. Now, I call that a holistic approach. That's respectful. That's compassionate, as opposed to, you know what? A lot of people come to therapy saying, I got this anger. I'd like you to cut it out of me. I mean, I felt that way before. I got this problem. Can you please do some sort of surgery on me, remove it so I never have to think about it again? But that's not what's best.
Right.
There's no growth in that. And even if you could cut it out, the things that you're doing, the reasons that it's there would still be there, and you would just slowly grow that anger again.
Sure.
So the point is to learn from it and go beyond it. So I appreciate the things you're saying.
Yeah. Every symptom is a message to us that something's going on inside, and it's so important to listen to that symptom. I had so many other thoughts as you were talking. One was, I think every client that's walked through my door, I've had to have the discussion with and to sort of turn them from wanting to get rid of some part of them to wanting to explore. Because the tendency is to really dislike, if not hate, the part of ourselves that is making us suffer, whether it's binging and purging or self-harming or being terribly self-critical. It doesn't matter. So shifting a person from that self-hatred to the curiosity and the compassion is really one of the first steps in therapy. And what you were saying earlier about children, I bit more self-disclosure on my part. You know, I grew up, I was a kid in the 70s, I'm 41, and my folks divorced when I was 5, and it was a very difficult time for me. My father was actually hospitalized for a while. I had to live with my grandparents, didn't see my mom for a year. And so the first 4-5 years of elementary school, I was very tuned out, and had ADHD been the disorder, the popular disorder at the time, I'm sure I would have been diagnosed and medicated, and I'm so fortunate I wasn't. But at one point, my mom took me to a psychologist at a university to get some psychological testing, because I was doing terrible in school. And what they found, what they determined is that I was, I sort of had, I don't remember exactly what it was, and it's been a long time since I studied those IQ tests, but I think I was, how do I say it? I processed information visually, and that I wasn't as skilled as processing information verbally, and that was affecting my school. But the whole process of the whole experience of my mom feeling like she needed to take me to get tested and then to get feedback, even though it wasn't terrible, was very shaming.
Yes.
And have no doubt that affected me for a very long time. And I didn't heal some of those burdens until I was, in my late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah. So they can stay with you for a long time until you put your conscious attention on it and begin to accept it. And that's why you can't cut it out. That's why I can't do that, right?
Well, for me, it was really just tuning into that little boy that I used to be and in my own way kind of holding compassion for that boy and being there for that boy the way that somebody needed to back then.
Right.
So, wow, I love talking about this stuff. So can I go on and tell you about the next element?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, great. So the next element is empowering. And empowering is really about maintaining the belief that people have the capacity for change and are equipped with their own inner resources to do that, to make the change. And it's holding to that, no matter how strong a client's defenses are, or how big their wounds are, and I know that sounds obvious, but from my experience over the last 20 years in mental health, the tendency is to view people as fundamentally flawed, especially in residential treatment, especially in community mental health, especially in more medical model environments, like hospitals, where people often with, the most extreme inner constellations tend to wind up. And I think it's a combination of inexperienced clinicians, the medical model, and the fear of the unknown. You know, it's just a common human reaction in the face of the unknown to fight or flee, to attack or run. So instead of staying curious and compassionate, do otherwise. And especially if your sense of self-worth is dependent on helping people, when an extreme case comes into your hospital and you don't have the answers or you're inexperienced with leading someone on that deep emotional journey into the psyche, then it becomes the clinician's own survival strategy to pathologize and to see the client is flawed. And of course, when a therapist views a person as fundamentally flawed or incapable of change, then the person is more likely to actually feel and become flawed. And it's really how some therapists can make people crazy. And I get that some people may not be able to overcome their obstacles or to change really in this lifetime. But the therapist shouldn't contribute to it. They shouldn't be an additional barrier.
Right. We shouldn't be reinforcing that in people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I imagine some therapists are going to be really upset when they hear me say that, my experience is that there's a tendency to do this. I want to say that, again, as I said in the introduction, the majority of therapists are well-meaning, well-intentioned. But there tends, this tends to happen more so in residential treatment and hospital settings.
Yeah, well, at some time we'll have to, not today, but we'll have to compare a story. I mean, I the agencies that I've worked in the past, sitting around the staff lounge, having lunch and hearing people tell stories about the therapist, tell stories about their day. That's how I got my education about the tendency of many therapists to be wildly immature.
Oh, and my
if their clients only knew what they were saying. And that's, anyways, we can't get into all of that today, but because we're talking about the elements of what a good therapist is, and but at any rate, maybe in a future conversation we could share more stories about that.
Sure, yeah, but I know what you're talking about. There's a lot of negative talk, a lot of shaming, a lot of condescension, and it's awful. It just thinking about it makes me want to throw up, and it's why I quickly got out of residential treatment and community mental health. And I don't want to give a bad name, because not all residential treatment centers or community mental health centers operate this way, but there are handfuls.
Right.
Sadly.
Yeah.
So, do we have time for me to talk about the next element?
Yeah, we have a few more. We have we have about 5 minutes left for the conversation, and so we can do with them what we will. I'd love to hear the next element.
Sure. Yeah, I'll try to do it quickly. There's one or two I'd love to fit in if it's possible.
Sure.
So the next one is an element I call collaborative or collaboration. And, the spirit of this is really summarized in the words of Albert Schweitzer. It's one of my favorite quotes. He wrote, "Each patient carries his own doctor inside him. We are at our best when we give the doctor who resides within each patient a chance to go to work."
Mm.
Yeah, just love what that means. So collaborative therapy gets established when the therapist encourages a client to become the co-therapist. Essentially, a therapist who works collaboratively trusts their client to know themselves better, or to have the potential to know themselves better than anyone else, better than the therapist. And they trust that client to be able to, at some point, access their own wisdom and to know how to best care for their own wounds. It really puts the client in the driver's seat of the therapy. And it's so backwards from what most younger therapists are taught in graduate schools. And it takes a lot of practice for therapists to let go and to trust that their clients can intuitively figure out what they need inside. So, the orientation I see from a lot of newer therapists is really the opposite of collaboration. It's the opposite of trusting that the client across from me not only knows themselves better than I do, but that they have all those resources inside to feel better. And so many therapists, just like I did when I was new, spend their time trying to give their clients what they think they don't have, whether it's wisdom or advice or nurturing, acceptance, love. And all of that does, in the long run, is really feed dependency and keep the client looking outside themselves for redemption. Essentially.
Yeah. So, and I think in an interesting way, if I, as the therapist, feel like I'm the one that needs to give the client, that I need to heal the client, and I switch from an orientation where I facilitate, the client heals themselves, guess what? The client also gets the credit for that healing. If I'm the healer, I get the credit. If the client's the healer and I'm a witness, the client gets the credit. What I did was witness.
Yeah.
And so my ego as a therapist, my need to be validated as a therapist, needs to be in check.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I know you have another element to talk about, and we are out of time. So what this means, Noah, is I've got to have you back.
I'd love that. That would be wonderful. It's so much fun.
Yeah. I've got to have you back on the show because you don't see I don't meet a lot of therapists who are able to talk with such clarity about the issues. And to me, this is really about empowering consumers and clients to do their part to ensure that the relationship with the therapist is healthy. Because I do not believe that the clients should put up with the bad behavior of a therapist. I think the client should be able to recognize it early and move on to a different therapist. And I really want people to recognize what good therapy is. And, you know, that's the way I see, that's why I think goodtherapy.org and the work that you're doing is so valuable and such a service to people, because I think a lot of people go to therapy not knowing what to expect. They're just in pain and they want somebody to help. And unfortunately, they're in pain, they want somebody to help, and they need to make that therapist earn their trust. Mm-hmm. And I think that educating people about these kinds of issues is extraordinarily important. So I thank you for being on the show with us today, and we'll encourage our readers to go to goodtherapy.org. If you're looking for a therapist, goodtherapy.org, you have a search engine within that where you can type in your zip code and find a therapist that's a member of goodtherapy.org in a local community. Is that not correct, Noah?
Yeah, that is correct. And we, you know, we do our best to, you know, we have the highest membership standards. We hand review everybody, you know, checking for their licensure, educational, and philosophical orientations. We look at their website to see if they're communicating are in line with our sort of mission and values and whatnot. So, you know, it's not a perfect system, but it comes closer to the ideal than any other system. And thank you so much, Mike, for this opportunity. I was nervous, but I had a really fun time, and I love talking about this stuff. And I'd love to meet with you again.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for the service that you're doing. Much appreciated. Noah Rubenstein of goodtherapy.org. Again, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. What a show. Thanks so much to Noah of goodtherapy.org. Before we finish, I want to tell you here real quickly about an article that I appreciated that Noah wrote. If you go to goodtherapy.org, click on the About Us tab on the far right, and then click on Noah Rubenstein's profile page, you can find an article called 50 Warning Signs of Questionable Therapy and Counseling. As I read through that article, I'm here to tell you that these are things that you need to be aware of. If you find a solid therapist, and there are so many good solid therapists, you don't have to worry about these things. However, in the midst of all these good, ethical, solid therapists, there are some bad apples, some immature people, some people who don't get it are doing therapy for the wrong reasons, and you need to be aware of it. You need to make sure that none of these warning signs are happening in your therapy and in your counseling experience, and if they are, it may be time to consider moving on to a different therapist. It's such a great profession, and those of us who are involved in it, if we are not willing to hold ourselves accountable and to an incredibly high standard, then we're putting the profession at risk. And I'm just grateful to Noah and goodtherapy.org for being involved with Mental Health Exposed and for spreading the word and educating people about what good therapy is. Thanks so much for joining us on Mental Health Exposed. We'll see you soon.
This year alone, 1 in 3 Americans will experience a mental health issue. When coping with life's challenging situations of all kinds, it is important to get the right kind of help. GoodTherapy.org is your advocate and resource for finding the right therapist. GoodTherapy.org is an association of thousands of therapists who value collaborative therapy and believe their clients have the power to tap into their own internal resources. Each GoodTherapy.org therapist is individually verified for adherence to strict educational, licensure, and philosophical guidelines. GoodTherapy.org is more than just a therapist directory. As part of its mission and vision to educate consumers about the differences between healthy and unhealthy therapy, GoodTherapy.org provides a wealth of resources about the process of therapy and mental health-related blogs, news, and expert articles. If you or somebody you know needs help, would like to find a therapist, or would like information about mental health, visit www.goodtherapy.org, because everybody deserves to feel good. Mental Health Exposed is sponsored by the INLP Center. Visit INLPCenter.com to get your free 30-minute life coaching strategy session with Mike Bundren. INLPCenter.com.